Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for the weekend edition of July 4th and 5th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, I'm Glad to Be American, America at 250. Naturalization ceremony at Hotel Royer sees 56 immigrants become citizens. This article is by Luke Taylor. Urbana. For Lydia Shitaya, becoming a U.S. citizen was all about patience. The time was long, but the process was easy, she said. You just have to submit everything they asked for. Originally from Congo, Shitaya moved to the U.S. to follow her husband, who came over in 2013. She's with him in Bloomington now, where she's a nurse, student, and mother. I'm proud and I feel really excited because I've been waiting for this moment for a long time, almost a year, she said. Now I'm a citizen. I'm happy. Tshitaya was one of 56 people who swore an oath of allegiance to the United States at a ceremony Thursday at the Hotel Royer in downtown Urbana, conducted by U.S. Magistrate Judge Eric Long and attended by U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat, Illinois, and Urbana Mayor Deshaun Williams, each of whom shared their thoughts and personal experiences about the American dream. Tshitaya said she appreciated what they all said. They make us feel not different from actually American, she said. The judge and senator say we have to be proud of our background. It doesn't matter where we came from or that we have an accent. We have to be proud of it. I'm glad to be American and to have the background I have. Countries of origin for this group of new citizens included Brazil, Canada, China, Congo, Cuba, Equatorial Guinea, Germany, Honduras, India, Jordan, South Korea, Libya, Lebanon, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Nigeria, North Macedonia, Pakistan, Philippines, Togo, the United Kingdom, Vietnam, and Yemen. Durbin shared a story about his grandmother, who brought her three children from Lithuania to join her husband in St. Louis in 1911. She went through the naturalization process 20 years later. Before she died, he asked her about her naturalization certificate. She said, I know just where it is. And she went and got the certificate, he told the new citizens. I pulled it out of the brown envelope, and a little piece of paper fell to the floor. It was the $2.50 receipt she had received for filing her paperwork. She'd kept it just in case anyone from the government ever challenged her right to citizenship. I can tell that story because that's my story, Durbin said. That's my family's story. That's the American story that can be repeated all over this room, time and time again. He said that when his family arrived in the U.S., some welcomed them with open arms, while others didn't, and it would be the same today. You have an opportunity to make this a better nation, he told the new citizens. Long spoke of his own path from humble beginnings to the role of federal judge, encouraging the people who chose to settle in the U.S. to see the opportunities presented to them, not just the nation's issues. He quoted Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King Jr.'s hopes and dreams for the country and said those same goals should be at the forefront today. Whenever our nation has fallen short of its ideals, those seeking justice have not abandoned America's founding principles, Long said. Instead, they've appealed to them. Continuing on the front page, in an article titled, Representing the United States of America was one of the greatest honors of my life. Throughout the week, we've asked community members to share stories of when they felt proudest to be an American. Among the contributors, another panel in today's Big Ten, and here, wheelchair racing legend and University of Illinois alumna Jean Driscoll, winner of a dozen Paralympic medals and 8 Boston Marathon championships. One of the greatest honors of my life was representing the University of Illinois and the United States of America as an athlete, both domestically and abroad, during the Boston Marathon and other races and meets. I was in orange and blue. When competing in the Olympics, Paralympics, and World Championships, I was in red, white, and blue. There are many stories that could be told, but one of my fondest memories is from the 2000 Sydney Paralympic Games. The final event of the 11-day competition was the marathon. It was also the final event of my athletic career. In a race that came down to a final sprint, I managed to cross the finish line first. The gold medal I received was the last one given before the closing ceremonies began. I watched the U.S. flag being raised in the stadium as the Star Spangled Banner played. My hand was over my heart while singing the words in my head. I do know them. I was intentional about taking in every moment as my eyes welled up with tears. Afterward, I congratulated the women who won the silver and bronze medals, both from Japan. Part of the privilege of representing the USA was developing relationships with athletes from across the country and around the world. This is a point of pride and something I still cherish about the experience. It is customary for athletes from different countries to trade uniform pieces after the closing ceremonies as a sign of goodwill and respect. Quite honestly, though, I never wanted to part with my U.S. clothing, even the t-shirts. I still have most of them and wear several items to this day. There is no question that representing the United States of America was one of the greatest honors of my life. You can head to newsgazette.com/podcasts to hear Jean Driscoll discuss her proudest moments, whether it's time to add adaptive athletes to the Illinois Athletics Hall of Fame, her new job in St. Louis, and much more, on the 100th episode of News Gazette Radio, powered by GTPS Insurance. Also on the front page, we have the opinion of Tom Casey, titled Champaign County's Fragile Link to the American Revolution. 250 years ago, when the Revolutionary War was in its early stages and the Declaration of Independence was being drafted, debated, and adopted, Champaign County did not exist, nor did Illinois. And according to historians, it would be almost 50 years before a white man settled in this land of tall grass prairie and swampy woods. Champaign County, 250 years ago, was 750 miles and many decades away from being part of the United States of America, and yet the county has a tenuous link, perhaps two, to the American Revolution. Because record keeping and handwriting from those days is so poor, there are legitimate questions about whether William Hayes, buried in the Clements Cemetery northeast of Urbana, is a Revolutionary War veteran, as his tombstone states. Further, the grave of Robert Brownfield, who died in 1841 and reportedly was buried at the Reinhardt Cemetery, is nowhere to be found. Neither is the old cemetery, which was near what now is the corner of Perkins and High Cross Roads, about 2 miles south of the Clement Cemetery. Both cemeteries are in the area known as Big Grove, the heavily wooded place where many of the early white Champaign County settlers made their homes. And both men are frequently cited as among the rare Illinois residents who had fought in the Revolutionary War. A 1912 story in the Urbana Courier-Herald said that four old soldiers from the war were buried near Urbana. It mentioned William Kirby and Newton Shaw, both of whom are buried at Clement Cemetery. But Kirby was born in 1814, long after the war had ended, and Shaw was born in 1823. A 1956 report by the Illinois Veterans Commission listed 10 Revolutionary War soldiers buried in Champaign County, but that error-filled report even included Henry Sadorus, who was born in 1783, the year the Treaty of Paris was signed, ending the Revolutionary War. There is ample evidence that Brownfield fought in the Revolutionary War. One group, the Hatcher Families Genealogy Association, said Brownfield, who was born in 1760 in Pennsylvania, served as a guard for supply wagon trains with the Pennsylvania Rangers. After the war, he moved to Kentucky, then Illinois. Remarkably, there is a four-page 1840 Congressional Record Report from the Committee on Revolutionary Pensions detailing Brownfield's request for a veteran's pension. It noted that in August of 1835, Brownfield, then 75 years old and a resident of Champaign County, testified that he had enlisted in the Army in the spring of 1780 and served for about 9 months. The evidence on behalf of Hayes' Revolutionary War service is less compelling, but there are no fewer than two gravestones at the Clement Cemetery that contend he fought in the war. At the bottom of an older stone, leaning against a fence in the cemetery, is an inscription: "He was a soldier in the Revolutionary War." The stone is decorated with a flag with 13 stars. A newer stone claims that Hayes was a corporal in Colonel Benjamin Ruggles Woolbridge's Massachusetts Regiment. But that regiment was formed the day after the Revolutionary War began and was active only from 1775 to 1777. Hayes was born in 1765, meaning that he would have been a preteen soldier during his time with the regiment. More likely, Hayes was a veteran of the War of 1812. Found online is an application dated February 6, 1880, from his widow, Sarah Hayes, then 87, and a resident of Urbana, for a War of 1812 widow's pension. The application said that William Hayes served as a private in the infantry from Ohio, and that after the war, the couple lived in Ohio until 1839, then moved to Indiana for 3 years, and finally to Champaign County, where he lived until his death in 1852. Tom Kasich is retired after 50 years with the News Gazette. And continuing inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with On Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing ltaylor@newsgazette.com. Morgan Frush's first foray into bartending 5 years ago was not as easy as simply stepping behind the bar. She was trained on the job while working at Jupiter's Pizzeria. "I had to wait tables for a long time before they would train me behind the bar," Frush said. "I believe I learned from the best, though." Now she's serving as a bartender at the 25 O'Clock Brewing Company over in Urbana. Frush says folks should come down and enjoy the patio, overlooking Boneyard Creek. She also recommends it for large groups, since the brewery has big tables to accommodate them. It's very Cheers-esque. "So if you like making friends and interesting conversation, come on by," she said. If you're looking for a new drink to try out, Frush suggests the Perpetual Brat, a pomegranate sour ale brewed in-house. She said it's also good as a shandy when combined with house-made ginger ale. Over the last few years, she's found that the best things about being a bartender are the friendships she's made and interesting people she's met. I've navigated what to major in at college by talking to people at the brewery. It really is a wonderful and supportive community atmosphere, Frush said. If not at the brewery, you might catch Frush as a bud tender over at Cloud 9 Cannabis, hanging out at Rose Bowl Tavern, or working on classwork for her studies at the University of Illinois. She loves art and music, as well as staying involved locally. So she says you'll see her somewhere around town anytime. And in history, area history in 1926, as part of the nation's sesquicentennial celebration, thousands are expected in Crystal Lake Park to watch Zeb, the famous hurdling horse of Troop E, leap a human hurdle consisting of a brave sergeant. Troop E members will also thrill the crowd with Cossack riding, daredevil leaps through fire, Roman riding, and a rescue race. The rodeo will be followed by a band concert with dancing and a fireworks display expected to excel that of any previous year. In 1976, if you're getting ready to overdose on Bicentennial PAP this weekend, the Bent Bicentennial Film Festival offers a ready antidote. Starting at 9 p.m. today and Saturday, 6 hours of satirical short films will run at the McKinley Foundation. That works out to 3 cents a film, and anyone who has ever seen Bambi Meets Godzilla knows how much humor you can pack into a few minutes of film. And in this bicentennial year, any form of subversiveness should be applauded. In 2011, after 3 tough years for the restaurant business, the National Restaurant Association is forecasting a positive year for the industry in 2011. In Champaign-Urbana, however, there has been a spate of recent restaurant closings, from quick service restaurants to full service ones, prompting many to ask, has the economic downturn been keeping customers at home? Are there too many restaurants? Was it the food, the service? The most recent restaurants to shutter include Carmen's, Utita's, and Tang Dynasty, plus Guadalajara, 6 Minute Chinese, East Asian Buffet, Sandela's, and V Picasso have all closed in the last year. In international history, today's highlight, on July 3rd, 1863, the Civil War Battle of Gettysburg in Pennsylvania ended in a major victory for the North, as Confederate troops failed to breach Union positions during Pickett's charge. Continuing with our communities, in Sangamon County, ex-deputy convicted of murder seeking medical release. This is by Beth Hunsdorfer. Less than 6 months into his 20-year prison sentence, the former sheriff's deputy convicted of second-degree murder for the fatal shooting of an unarmed Sangamon County woman is asking the state to release him from prison on medical grounds. Sean Grayson, 32, filed for release under the Joe Coleman Act last month. Under the act, a person in custody who is terminally ill or is medically incapacitated could be considered eligible. Medically incapacitated is defined as having a medical condition that prevents them from completing daily living activity behind bars without assistance and will likely not improve in the future. Doctors diagnosed Grayson with stage 3 colon cancer in 2023. His attorney, Mark Wyckoff, told the judge at his sentencing in January, but added that the cancer had progressed to stage 4 and spread to his liver and lungs. At his trial last October, Grayson appeared to have lost between 40 and 50 pounds from the time of the shooting and appeared gaunt. This is a much different Grayson than the one that appeared at Sonia Massey's door almost 2 years ago on July 6, 2024. Grayson, then 6'4" and weighing 225 pounds, answered a call to Massey's home after she called 911 to report a prowler outside her home. A video released after the shooting depicted Grayson and his partner clearing the outside of the house, finding no prowler, and entering Massey's home to question her further. During that exchange, and under Grayson's direction, Massey went to the stove to remove a pot of boiling water. As Massey did so, she said, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus." Grayson responded, "I'll effing shoot you right in the effing face," and drew his gun. Seconds later, Grayson fired 3 times. Fatally wounding Massey with 1 shot in the head. "He's a killer. I apologize that he must suffer. But he has to pay for what he did," said Sonte Massey, Sonia Massey's cousin. Grayson was indicted on multiple counts of first-degree murder. He later was convicted by a jury of second-degree murder. At his sentencing hearing 3 months later, Wyckoff cited Grayson's worsening medical reason in his plea for leniency. The decision to release Grayson will be made by the Prisoner Review Board. The PRB will review a medical evaluation from the Illinois Department of Corrections, identifying the diagnosis, life expectancy, activities of daily living that require assistance, and level of medical care required by the incarcerated person. A 3-member panel will make a decision within 90 days of receiving the application. Under the statute, the PRB can consider the diagnosis and likelihood of recovery, the potential cost of health care if there is continued incarceration, the impact that may have on the provision of medical care throughout IDOC, the present likelihood of and ability to pose a danger, and victim statements. The PRB can also weigh whether the person's condition was explicitly disclosed to the original sentencing judge and taken into account at the time of sentencing, as it was in Grayson's case. One of the factors that isn't specifically mentioned in the review process, but often considered, is the length of the sentence a person has served before making the application. How the act came about? The act, which was approved by the Illinois legislature and became the law in 2022, is named for 82-year-old Joe Coleman, a decorated Army veteran and incarcerated father who died of prostate cancer in prison. The law was created so that dying and severely incapacitated individuals do not have to die behind bars. There are approximately 30,000 incarcerated people in Illinois. A total of 34 were approved for compassionate medical release in 2024, according to a report by IDOC. Most were released to private residences, others went to nursing homes, transitional housing, or rehabilitation centers. But 8 who applied were not released because they failed to find an approved living site. The number of compassionate medical releases approved warrants a call for more transparency from the Prisoner Review Board, according to Jennifer Ballum Kotz, the executive director of the Correctional Watchdog John Howard Association of Illinois. That transparency could result in changes in IDOC policy that would better serve the people in custody, especially the sick and elderly, shifting resources from security to providing medical care at designated facilities. If the vast majority of people in custody in this facility are incapacitated in some way, shape, or form, It is silly to continue paying security costs for people that don't require that kind of security for any reason, right? Vollenkotz said. Ben Crump, a nationally renowned civil rights attorney who represented Massey's family in a successful civil claim, urged the PRB to deny the petition. Her family remains in deep grief from the trauma and loss. Grayson's hearing before the PRB is scheduled for July 31. Continuing with our communities, we have the crime report. Each week, News Gazette Courts reporter Luke Taylor will assemble a bulletin of recent criminal activity reported by area police agencies. In Champaign, the 1600 block of Sangamon Drive, police took a report of driving under the influence at 12:16 a.m. on June 25th. At Staley Road and Springfield Avenue, an arrest was made for driving under the influence at 12:32 a.m. June 26th. A 0 to 100 block of University Avenue, a man assaulted police officers, abused 911, and resisted police at 11:21 a.m. June 26th. At University Avenue and Walnut Street, an arrest was made for driving under the influence at the scene of an accident involving property damage at 8:59 p.m. on June 26th. At Randolph Street and Maple Street, an arrest was made for driving under the influence at 11:56 p.m. on June 26th. At the 1000 block of Clark Road, an arrest was made for driving under the influence at 9:47 a.m. on Sunday. In the 1300 block of Oak Street, a suspect burglarized a vehicle and fled from officers and was arrested at 1:07 p.m. Monday. In the 2600 block of Prospect Avenue, two suspects were arrested for retail theft at 5:51 p.m. on Monday. In Urbana, the 400 block of Vine Street, an offender attempted to extort a victim for money online at 1:08 a.m. June 25. In the 1200 block of Harding Drive, a man lied about his name while having warrants from Wisconsin and Cook County, then fled on foot from police and was discovered to have possession of a weapon while being a felon at 6:05 p.m. on Saturday. In the 600 block of University Avenue, a woman battered a nurse at the hospital while receiving treatment at 3:45 p.m. on Sunday. In the 100 block of Main Street, an unknown female offender slashed a man with a cutting instrument near a bus terminal in Urbana. At Romine Street and Beardsley Avenue, unknown offenders recklessly discharged firearms in a residential area on Monday. The 2000 block of Vauder Street, a woman was battered while touring a local apartment complex by a maintenance worker who also fought with her father on Monday. In the 700 block of Green Street, two arrestees stole a package off a porch and returned to their residence, but the package was returned to its owner on Tuesday. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for the weekend edition of July 4th and 5th. Please stay tuned.